Drive Time on RT Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Create a brighter future for your employees with Zurich Corporate Pensions. Trust excellence. Visit zurichcorporate.ie to learn more.
Now, first this afternoon, EirGrid have announced the results of the country's first auction for the generation of electricity from offshore wind farms. Wind Energy Ireland CEO Noel Cunniff told RTÉ's News at One that it was a landmark day for the delivery of renewable energy in Ireland. With more on this and what it might mean for consumers, we're joined now by environment correspondent with the Irish Independent, Caroline Doherty. And Caroline, you're welcome to the programme this afternoon. So this auction today had wind energy companies compete for contracts to provide electricity. Can you explain to us how it worked?
Sure. So when you supply electricity as an electricity generator, you supply on the wholesale market. And that means that whatever price you get, that's the price that you sell to the likes of the companies whose names we see in our bills. So you're a big electricity producer. You sell electricity to the likes of Energia or SSE Electricity or Electric Ireland or Pinergy or whoever you see on your bill who are selling it on to houses and businesses. So the state wanted to replace some of the electricity making that we do with coal and gas by replacing that with wind energy, with wind-produced electricity, and they want it offshore. That's a huge investment for any it's a huge undertaking. It's complicated. It's costly. So to get companies to actually go offshore, build these huge turbines in a difficult setting, which is the sea, they need a guaranteed price. They need to know that over the next 20 years, they're going to get a guaranteed return. So there was an auction set up. The state would guarantee a price for the next 20 years, per megawatt hour of electricity produced. Sorry for being technical. The companies, six companies, put in a bid to say at what price they would be willing to provide electricity, at what price per megawatt hour. The state said you can't bid higher than 150 euro per megawatt hour, but they didn't put any other restrictions on it. The six companies put in confidential bids into EirGrid, which controls all this stuff, and the four cheapest have now got contracts, 20-year contracts, to provide electricity at a price considerably lower than the 150 maximum that the state set. The prices come in at 86 euro. So what will happen over the next 20 years? They will get a guaranteed price of 86 euro per megawatt hour of electricity they produce. Now, that's comparable. That has to be compared to the wholesale market, the free market, if you like. So what happens is if the market price is higher than that, so that if they weren't tied into this contract with the state, if they could just sell it on the free market, if they would get a lot higher than that, they will be compensated for that. And they will get a top-up payment from the state, from the taxpayer, essentially.
And do we know how much that compensation will be or that top-up will be?
Well, if you compare the 86 euro with what we're currently paying on the wholesale market, the prices in the last sort of recent weeks, now they've settled down a bit from the madness of last year when they were 200 euro. So 86 is a lot lower than 200 euro. They've settled down at around sort of between 110, 120, 130 in recent weeks. So there is certainly a gap between that price that's now been agreed and the wholesale market. But they will have to pay back, those companies will have to pay back to the state, to the taxpayer, if that 86 euro is actually more than what they would have got on the wholesale market. So that'll change, like, you know, week by week, day by day almost, because the wholesale market fluctuates a lot. Okay. And it should kind of balance out over the 20 years.
And was the competition, the bids, you say the four cheapest one that won the competition. So obviously, based on that, the main criteria was cost. You know, often in these tendering processes, the cost will be given a certain percentage, but a load of other considerations will also be given quite significant percentages in terms of consideration when awarding a tender.
Well, these particular companies, the six companies who were allowed into this auction, had already kind of passed all these other various tests. They were given what are called MACs, Maritime Area Consents, and that had done kind of preliminary checks on the technical feasibility of the projects, the financial backing that they have, so that we know that there are backers out there for them. These companies are all established companies, really big energy companies, you know, German, Norwegian, there's a UK based one, there's French, they've all done this stuff before. They all have wind farms, offshore wind farms up and operating in the North Sea. So those checks were done on that basis. So that those kind of thresholds, if you like, have been reached, and they are of a certain quality before they were allowed, these projects before they were allowed into the auction process.
So talk to us then just briefly about who the companies are, and more importantly, I think for most people, where those wind farms are likely to be.
Well, you know, look out your window to the east if you're in Dublin, because at some stage over the next maybe 4, 5, 6, 7 years, we're going to see turbines. So if we take it from north and going south along the coast, one of the first one is the North Irish Sea Array, is called, and that will be sort of, if you can imagine, from Balbriggan and slightly upwards. And there's roughly at this stage, they're looking at about 36 turbines. And they will be about sort of 7 kilometres from the shore and further out. So that's about as close as they'll be to the shore. And that's backed by a Norwegian firm, Statkraft. And that's one of the slightly smaller of the four. Moving slightly further south, then you have the Dublin Array, and that's the main backer there, the German company, RWE, and it's looking at about 50 turbines. In Dublin Bay, roughly from outwards from sort of Dunleary, Blackrock and south to almost Bray. And they will be roughly from 10 kilometres out of from shore and further out from there. And then almost directly after that, you have the really big one, which is the Codling Wind Park. It's a French-Norwegian project, EDF and Fred Olsen, the two companies involved there. And it's twice as big as some of the others in this particular auction. And it's looking at maybe 100 turbines, and they will stretch for about 20 kilometres, roughly from just north of Greystones in County Wicklow down to Wicklow Town. And they will be at roughly 13 kilometres from shore and outwards. So that's the three kind of almost in a string along the east coast. And then there's one off the west coast. It's off Connemara. It's roughly 5 kilometres, a little closer. 5 kilometres would be the closest point to shore. It's the Skerja Rocks, it's called, and it's backed by Corio Generation. They were looking at about 20 turbines against one of the slightly smaller ones. And it's kind of, I suppose it's off Connemara, really, is the simplest way of putting it.
Okay.
Some of those details will change because obviously they have to go through planning. So the exact numbers of turbines and turbines change, the technology changes over time as well. So they may need a few less if they can get more efficiencies out of new models.
Okay, so speaking of planning then, will those wind farms be visible from the shore, do you expect? And what does the planning process look like for something this big?
They will be visible. And if you know, there have been public consultations on in recent times, and they've done these kind of photo montages from different angles, from different parts of the coastline. And what you'll see, the current largest in use wind turbine is 320 metres high. You know, that's 2.5 times the height of the Dublin Spire. They're very big. So even though they're a long way out from shore, relatively long way out from shore, they will be visible. And they'll be visible from parts of the shore, you know. So if you're around Dublin Bay, even if there isn't one directly out from where you're standing, you look to the left, or look to the right, you'll probably see them. So they are going to be visible. In different sun and light conditions, they won't be as visible. But the outer ones will have to have lights at night. So you're going to see, you know, extra lights at night that you might, in terms of what you might see from shipping routes and lighthouses and things, you'll see a few more lights. The planning process is sort of the final hurdle, really, because, as I say, they've been through this MACS process, they've now been through the auction process. Some of these particular projects, you know, have been poking around for nearly 20 years. So they've done a lot of work on their plans, if you like. But yes, they have to go to Bord Pleanála. They're all saying they'll get to Bord Pleanála before the end of the year. Now, that's a difficulty because they're very complicated plans. And we haven't done an offshore wind project in Ireland since the late 1990s. A little 7-turbine wind farm off of Arklow, which is actually still operating. It started operating in the early 2000s. It wasn't expected to last that long, but we really just stood still after that. So we need a lot of expertise. And Bord Pleanála has been frantically recruiting experts from all over. And they do say they'll be ready to go, that they have it now, a designated a sort of marine planning section, and that they will be ready to go, and that they will, this will get priority. So these kind of projects will get priority. But still, okay, you're probably looking realistically at a couple of years through the planning process, you know, and then another maybe year or two to get all the final financial backing in place and to secure a port. We don't have a port that can actually, is big enough to bring in these massive turbines and assemble them here. You know, Belfast is the only one big enough, and it's very busy, so they may not get a spot there, so they may have to use North France or Holland or somewhere. So another year sort of to get all that together, and then construction, and then operation.
Okay, so as you say, a big hurdle, but plenty of other hurdles yet to come by the sounds of it. Maybe 2030 by the time we get them up and running. But it will, the hope is, Caroline, finally, that it will eventually lead to cheaper electricity for consumers.
It's cheaper, and certainly stability. Stability is a big thing. We saw over the last year that people are really, you know, at the mercy of the market. And if they can have some sort of stability over 20 years, that surely should benefit people.
All right. Environment correspondent with the Irish Independent, Caroline Doherty, thank you very much for this. And we will be returning to the story a little later on. We'll be speaking to one of the companies awarded one of those the licenses today. We'll be speaking to them just after 5 o'clock.
For more on this, we're joined by Kevin O'Donovan, who's Managing Director of Statecraft Ireland, one of the successful bidding companies at today's auction that secured 500 megawatts for their North Irish Sea Array project. Kevin O'Donovan, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thank you, Cormac.
And congratulations to you, I suppose.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, as you said, it's a significant day for renewable energy and particularly offshore wind energy in Ireland. It now allows the projects that were successful in the ORES auction to have certainty over the price for the power they produce.
We'll get to that in just a second. Tell me, give me a couple of lines on Statecraft Ireland, Kevin. Who are they?
Yeah, so Statecraft are 100% Norwegian-owned, state-owned company. They're the largest producer of renewable energy across Europe already, with a very proud history in hydro, onshore wind, solar, batteries. And Statecraft entered into the Irish market in 2018 and has already developed some of the first of the onshore wind farms built under the RES1 auctions. It's currently building the largest solar project in Ireland and would have built some of the first commercial scale battery projects in Ireland over the last few years.
Okay, so you would say a good track record in terms of wind energy. And I'm sure Statecraft Ireland were able to point to similar projects, projects of a similar size to the North Irish Sea Array project as well. Could you give us an idea of, is there any project that we could look into and say, look, that's exactly what they're going to build here?
Yeah, I think we actually have a very good reference point in terms of already in the Irish Sea. There is many offshore wind farms operating off the west coast of the UK. So I think that's a very good reference point to look at those projects and to get an understanding of what those projects would look like in the context of the east coast.
Sorry to jump in, Kev. How quickly do you think, because this is what everybody wants to find out, how quickly will you be generating energy?
Yeah, well, it's quite a long process to develop offshore projects. They're very large infrastructure, and actually the most important stage of the project now is the projects that are successful today now have to go to the planning permission process. We've spent a lot of time engaging with local communities over the last 7 or 8 years, and we're at the stage now where we've developed a design for the project, working with local communities, understanding the kind of characteristics of the area. We've also done a lot of environmental assessment work, and that now will culminate over the next few months in preparing a planning application, and that then has to go into planning with Bord Pennála. And we would hope that the commitments that have been given by the government and resource Bord Pennála to a sufficient level that decisions can be made in a reasonable timeline for the offshore projects.
Give us your hope then in terms of a timeline.
Yeah, I think, look, the government has set a target of these projects being operational before 2030, and I think that's a reasonable timeline. We would hope to do it maybe even a little bit faster than that, but as I say, it's very large infrastructure projects, and it does require that period of time.
And due diligence and so on. I'm sure you'll have to meet quite high environmental and biodiversity thresholds as well. What kind of work, what kind of reassurances can you give the public on that?
Yeah, I would think, yes, we will have to ensure that we have a very, what I would say, high bar when it comes to sustainability in developing these projects. And one of the benefits, I would say, of having a very active UK offshore sector and North Seas offshore wind farm sector is that there has been a large amount of very good experience and knowledge gained from that in terms of ensuring that marine environments, users of the area where the turbines and the associated grid infrastructure are located, are able to be developed and built in such a way that enables the existing communities and users of the area to be continue to use the area. So a lot of good evidence to show that that can be done in a good way. And, you know, as a company, trying to improve biodiversity, making sustainability just a part and fundamental to how we design our projects is just, I would say, what all offshore industry companies are aspiring to achieve.
It's certainly part of your raison d'être, I assume. But there's no way of building a project of this size in the Irish Sea or any other sea without disrupting the biodiversity of underwater sea life to some degree.
Yeah, I think, you know, projects have to be built, and there is an impact, and there is quite a lot of work involved in that. But the evidence that we're seeing from the offshore wind farms that are developed over the last decade or so across Europe is that actually you can lead to improvements in biodiversity by working with the design of the project in such a way that it can facilitate improvement in biodiversity in and around the structures. So for us, we see it as, yes, you can build this and have a net positive from a not just sustainability perspective, but also biodiversity. So that's, I think, the benefit of maybe Ireland being a little bit late coming to the table developing offshore is that it's actually quite a mature sector now. And there's a lot of evidence from well over a decade of projects operating around the world, but even in the Irish Sea already off the west coast of the UK. So I think there's a lot of good guidance there. And I'd encourage people to look at those examples as well as our own project website. We engage with the local community quite a bit. But
well, I'm sure people will be, and it'll be a strenuous part, I'm sure, one would hope, of the planning process as well. It's a momentous day, not just for Statkraft and the other three bidders who've been successful here, but for the country as well. But people will have questions because it will change the landscape, Kevin, for an awful lot of people, let's say in terms of tourism along the coast, who depend on tourism, be it on the East Coast with its beautiful coastline or the West Coast in the Wild Atlantic Way. How visible will these turbines be? How far out to sea will they be?
Yeah, well, I can only speak for our own project, but the turbines will be in a range of about 12 to 20 kilometres from the coastline. But as someone who's just come back from Copenhagen last week, where, you know, when you visit the city, there's quite a large amount of offshore developments in and around the harbour and coast of the city, you can see that, you know, offshore wind farms can be built as part of that landscape and seascape. And the approach we've taken is that these wind farms become a feature on the landscape rather than dominating or overtaking the landscape or the sea view, as we call it. So I think it's been successfully done throughout Europe, and our approach here has been to engage with local communities, show visual simulations of what different layouts will look like, and we'll continue to do that during the next phase of the process. So
it'll be
very clear and open to everyone as to what these would look like through these visual simulations.
The narrative certainly is that it's going to be the new normal because of the necessity of renewable energy to replace fossil-based energy. So I don't know where we can bring those arguments or complaints if they do come forth in great measure, but I want to talk to you about something we certainly can talk about, I think, and discuss over and back, and will be, I'm sure. The average price that was struck at the auction, was it just 86 euro per megawatt hour? Now, you might explain that to people. I think that was lower than what was expected. So explain to people how that was arrived at.
Yeah, so I think it's important that when people look at what prices are quoted, to the context of how it is designed in terms of that price is based on a 20-year price. So this is the price that the project will get paid for the power it delivers over the next or the first 20 years of the operating life of the project. So that's for context, I guess the average wholesale electricity price for the month of April was in the 130 to 140 euros per megawatt hour range. And then over the last 12 months, when we were at some of the highest points of electricity prices and the wholesale market was showing electricity in the 200 to 300 euros per megawatt hour plus average over the months in those real high price periods. So what this project does is it gives the Irish consumer the certainty that, well, this is the price we pay for this power for 20 years. And it also means that we have to source less gas to power our system because this project has the ability to provide power for approximately 500,000 homes. So,
and is that price set in stone, Kevin? Or is it, could it be readjusted upwards if construction costs of the project go up or there's a time delay or whatever the case may be that you might put forward?
Yeah, well, under the terms of the auction, it's that's the price we get paid. There is an indexation linked with it for part of the price to follow indexation, but yes, that is the price that people can expect the cost of the project.
And apart from the index-linked increases, you won't be coming back looking for more?
Well, this is what we bid in to say this is what we can build the project for. We need a development process where hopefully we can secure good agreement with local communities and then get the Bord Pinnála to grant planning in a suitable timeline.
Kevin, you know I'll be playing this clip back to you when you come back looking for more.
Yeah, no, we're very committed to delivering the project as it is and really excited about what's an important day for Ireland.
Okay, Kevin O'Donovan then, Managing Director of Statkraft Ireland, and forgive me for getting the name wrong at the very start, Statkraft Ireland, thank you very much indeed for joining us in the programme.
Thank you.